Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to today's teleseminar on helping siblings welcome a new baby. My name is Lyra Lestrange and I'm co-presenting today with Helena Mooney, and we're both certified Parenting by Connection instructors with Hand in Hand Parenting. So I just wanted to start off today by acknowledging all that you do and all that you have done for your children or child, and just really appreciating the time and effort that you've put in to your children's lives, and we really value your time. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy lives today to think about your parenting, and also for doing all the juggling that you had to do to be able to join us today, either live now or listening to the replay later. So we hope you get some new ideas that you can take away from this teleseminar on helping siblings welcome a new baby. So there is still a few parents registered for this call who haven't arrived, so I'll just talk a little bit about Hand in Hand just to allow people joining the call a bit later to settle in before we get right into the details of the call. So Hand in Hand Parenting is a not-for-profit organisation based in California, and there's instructors all around the world, including myself and Helena here in Australia. Patty Whipfler founded Hand in Hand in 1989, and she's had many thousands of hours of real life experience working with parents and children. So all the materials based on lots of experience. So Hand in Hand has a wide variety of ways that we can support parents really well, and you can access much of this support for free or very little cost through the website handinhandparenting.org. So there's lots of articles on different parenting topics, a blog written by parents just like ourselves, there's podcasts, there's booklets, there's also self-guided online courses and an email discussion group that's really active. And there are also instructor-led classes for parents and professionals, and we'll talk a little bit more about some specific offerings at the end of our teleseminar today. So I'd just also like to give you a little bit of a background in Parenting by Connection. Parenting by Connection is the approach that was developed by Patty and Hand in Hand Parenting. So this way of parenting, it's all about understanding your child, listening to them and offering connection. So the relationship with your child is at the centre of this approach, and the cornerstone of the approach is listening. So just to give you a bit of perspective, the traditional parenting has often focused on like rewards and punishment framework, or even the newer approaches that advocate time out and reasoning. They don't really work well in the long term. And this is because they're only addressing the outward behavior and not what is really going on emotionally for the child, which is more often not the underlying cause of the challenging behavior in the first place. So what Parenting by Connection does, by focusing on connection, we're aiming to address the issues at the cause and get to the bottom of what is happening. So the take-home message of Parenting by Connection is that your child is good. Like, this is the premise behind it. They know how to love, they know how to play, they know how to be kind and thoughtful and cooperative and to think well. However, in order for our children to be their inherently good selves, our children need to feel that sense of connection and safety with their parent or primary caregiver. So when the challenging behaviour arises, we can learn to look at it as a signal for help. So we can think about it as a big red flag waving, telling you that your child has gotten disconnected from you somehow and they need help to find their way back on track. And it's the same for us. Like, we really want to be close to our children, to love them fully, to see them thrive. However, when we're stressed or disconnected, that becomes difficult as well. And this is where the listening comes in as a key strategy for building that connection. So when we as parents can listen well and set limits well, then children can instinctively offload their negative feelings, the emotional tension they're carrying, and then regain that sense of connection and good judgment. And also, when we parents have the support of a good listener, this can help us feel less stressed and isolated, so then we're more able to offer the connection that our children need in order to thrive. So we teach through Parenting by Connection some specific listening tools, both for the parent and parent and children to practice together, but also parent to parent. And yeah, as I said, that the whole approach is based on listening and listening to ourselves, but listening to our children as well. So we really encourage you to reach out for the support that you may need in your own parenting, especially during transitions such as welcoming a new baby, so that you and your child can really thrive on that deep love that you have for each other. So thank you once again for joining this call on the topic of helping siblings welcome a new baby, and welcome to all those others that have just arrived. So before we get right into the specifics of the topic, Helena and I'll just tell you a little bit about ourselves. So as I mentioned before, I'm Lyra and I have two children, Finn who's 5 and Summer who's 3, and I live in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales in Australia. And I first heard about hand-in-hand parenting and parenting by connection when my first child was only a few months old. And so I'm lucky in that I had these ideas from pretty much from birth for both my children. I really resonated with the approach, and I've done my best to parent this way with both my children since birth. And when my daughter was born and I was a new mum of two, and that was, you know, it had its added challenges, as I'm sure you all understand, I took the Parenting by Connection starter class then, and that's really deepened my understanding of the tools and the approach, and then I went on to train as an instructor. So I really feel like I have a roadmap through Parenting by Connection, a bit of a framework from which to parent and to navigate the challenges that come up, and it's been so much easier and more rewarding in my parenting because of knowing this information and practicing the tools. Okay, so I'd like to also invite my co-presenter, Helena, to introduce herself now.
Thanks, Lyra. Hi, everyone. I'm Helena Mooney, and I live in Sydney, but I probably can tell from my accent I'm originally from England. I've also got two children. I've got Emily, who's 6, who you'll hear about later on, and George, who's 10 months, who's currently asleep, and fingers crossed he stays asleep for the whole call. I found out about Parenting by Connection when Emily was about 10 months old, as I was just exhausted. And it was such a huge revelation. I learned how to set limits lovingly, how to help my children sleep better, and obviously us then sleep better, and just basically how to help Emily deal with everyday challenges that we all experience. So I then trained as an instructor a couple of years ago. And now with George being sort of getting a bit older, I can now practice and teach. And so I really don't know what I would have done without learning this approach, because I knew I wanted to parent a bit differently to how I was parented. And I'm incredibly grateful to Hand in Hand for teaching us and developing this strategy. It's amazing. So I'll be sharing a little bit more later on, but now Lyra will just get us started. Thanks.
Thank you, Helena. Okay, so today we're going to talk about helping siblings welcome a new baby. So welcoming a new baby into the home is probably one of the biggest transitions that you and your family will make. And you deserve support for this job. Parenting whether with one or with two or more is a huge job. It's an emotional job, and it's often goes unappreciated. We don't get trained or paid, and it's hard to feel like we're doing well when we don't have the support that we need. So hopefully we can give you some ideas today to help you feel supported during this transition to welcoming a new baby. So we'll start today off by talking a bit about the brain and how it works in relation to the feelings that our children have. Then Helena will often offer you some ideas about how you can respond to your older child when they're showing signs of upset about the imminent arrival of their sibling. So, as I mentioned in the introduction, parenting by connection is based on the premise that our child is good and that they know how to cooperate and think well. So when they're not like this, that's often a signal to us that they've gotten disconnected from us somehow, and they're asking for our help in the only way they know how to in that moment. So just to talk a little bit about the brain, when a child is feeling connected, their limbic system, which is present from birth, and it's the social and emotional hub of the brain, When they're feeling connected, that limbic system senses a feeling of safety and attention from their parent, and all is well in their world. So there's someone close by who can pay attention to them, can love them, protect them, etc. And so with this sense of connection, the limbic system will then do its job of coordinating other areas of the brain, such as the prefrontal cortex. So this part of the brain is the thinking, reasoning part of the brain. So when all is well and a sense of connection is present, the prefrontal cortex is online, is lit up. The child can think and can learn and cooperate and be reasonable. However, when this sense of connection breaks, which it does frequently, and it's not our fault this happens, it's inevitable in just the way that our culture is set up. We cannot pay 100% attention to our children all the time. So when little disconnections build up over time, such as, you know, you're going to have to answer the phone, cook dinner, or attending to another child, or even when bigger disconnections occur, such as a frightening event, an illness, or a separation. So when these things happen, our children's feelings are hurt, and the limbic system then becomes flooded with emotion. So this sense of disconnection is just like an emotional emergency in our child's brain. And the limbic system then can't do its job of coordinating the other parts of the brain, including the prefrontal cortex, which shuts down and goes offline. And this is an immediate thing, and it happens to us as well. It's not just our children. So, for example, if we are just about to walk out the door with our children and we get an upsetting phone call, and we get off the call, and often we end up not being able to think for a while. Like a moment ago we had it together, and now we don't know where our bag is, what our children need, we can't remember where the car keys are, etc. Like our limbic system is flooded with that upsetting news that we got, our prefrontal cortex is shut down momentarily, so we can't remember what we're doing or think well in that moment. So it happens quite quickly. And to give another example of this happening with our children, so if we might be playing a game with our child, both feeling connected and happy, then the baby wakes up and you go to pick him up and come back to your older child, and he's about to throw the blocks at you, and he's just, yeah, really changed so quickly. And you wonder what's going on, but what has happened is that the disconnection they have felt, either in that moment by you leaving to go and attend to the baby, or the other thing that can happen is that you leaving can trigger the old hurts of times when they needed you close and you were giving attention to the baby. So when it happens again, their limbic system is flooded with those upset feelings, they can't think, and they just know that they need your attention to get back on track. And they call for that connection by acting out, for example, throwing the block. So you might be thinking, oh my goodness, how can I be close to my child all the time, especially with a new baby? And of course you can't. As I said before, this disconnection is inevitable and it's part of every day. But what we can do is recognize what is happening in our child's brain. And when we learn to do this, we can respond in ways that repair that sense of connection, rather than disconnect them more. And we can also learn ways of topping up our child's connection cup so that they have more in reserve and are less likely to feel disconnected from us so easily. So just to speak a little more on how our children show us that they're not connected and that they signal to us so that they need some help in getting back on track. And remember, they don't want to feel like this. Remember the premise behind this approach that they are inherently good. However, the signals that they send us when they're feeling disconnected can sometimes be quite challenging for us and are often misunderstood. For example, our child might be losing it over the smallest thing. You cut their sandwiches in triangles instead of squares and it's a huge big meltdown. Or they might act out aggressively towards you or a sibling or friend or the cat or dog. Or they might just be refusing to cooperate at all. And these are all indications to us that our child's brain cannot think well. So understanding our children this way requires a shift in thinking. And it's hard for us to do because chances are we were punished or ignored for these behaviours. And this is how we might feel like responding to our children as well. However, if we can respond with connection in these moments, then we are giving our children what they really need. And we are focusing on what makes the brain really work, connection, rather than punishing or ignoring, which further disconnects the child and then leads to more unreasonable behaviour. So it is a bit of a shift in thinking. But when we can come in with connection in these moments, with our warmth, with closeness, things like, sweetie, I can see you're really upset, but I can't let you throw that block. Or, I know you really want another cookie, but no more cookies now. And getting close as well and offer yourself, then this connection brings relief to our children. And then their limbic system starts to shed that emotional tension that was causing the off-track behaviour in the first place. So our child might start to cry or tantrum or even have a big laugh. And these are all good things. But this requires a big shift in our thinking too, because these behaviours aren't things to be punished or ignored. They're just our children showing us that the brain is doing what it needs to do to get back on track. The limbic system offloads the flood of feelings, and when this is done, it can do its job again of coordinating other parts of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex, and that allows our child to think well again and to cooperate and return to more reasonable ways of being. And our job is to listen as our child offloads this tension, and we'll talk more about that soon. So for now, I hope that gives you a bit of an insight into our children's behaviour and why they do the things that they do. And with a new sibling on the way, or one that's just arrived, chances are our older child will be showing us some of these signals that they've got some feelings bubbling up there below the surface. So one very powerful way that we can offer connection to a child who is signalling to us that they can't think is being playful. So Helena has some great ideas about using playfulness to pave the way for a new sibling, and I'd like to invite her to share them with us now.
Thanks, Lyra. Mm-hmm. Yeah, play is also a different shift in our view of how to treat children during difficult times or when they're going off track in their behaviour. And it's so powerful, and it's really effective at helping children and ourselves release emotions such as anger, frustration and fear. And in hand in hand, we call this play listening, as the play is done really specifically to help our children with big feelings. You probably find that you're doing a lot of play already in some of these games that I'm going to suggest you might be doing them instinctively. But also it can be really challenging for us, as we've got a million of other things to do, play can seem like a chore, especially if you're heavily pregnant and you're probably tired, or you've got your new baby already and you might be tired too. But if you can get into the mindset of it, it can be really fun for you as well and incredibly effective. So a couple of things I did with my five-year-old in preparation for our new baby were the she's mine game or he's mine game, which is really lovely and fills your child's emotional cup. So you can use this as like a preemptive game to reduce future off-track behaviour, or you can use it tactically when you can see your child is starting to still go off track and start to do some of the things that Lyra was saying earlier. And so basically both parents sort of playfully fight over the child. So each parent could playfully pull on each, you know, either arm saying, she's mine, no, she's mine. And the child in the middle starts to delight in feeling so loved by each parent. And the thing about play listening as well is that when your child laughs, as I said, it's releasing fear and frustration. So you sort of follow the laughter, you follow the giggles. And so you keep saying, she's mine, and then you can morph it and go, I love her more, no, I love her more. And you just sort of you've got that physical contact with her, and you're just sort of playfully trying to show her who loves her the most. And you go, I give the best kisses. No, I give the best kisses. And you're just showering the child with all lots of love, physical affection, and it's fun. And it's fun for all of you as well. So that's a really lovely way for the child to really feel the love from both parents, because often when a child's coming along
the baby's coming along, the child can really worry, is anybody going to still love me? Or, you know, especially with a beautiful new baby that everybody's kissing and cuddling and cooing over, the older child can feel really left out. So that's a really beautiful game to play, and it's great fun. And it can take like 2 minutes. You know, it's a really quick, fast one if you can see things are starting to get a bit wobbly. Another one that I did was when, this was completely impromptu because Emily was 5 at the time and I was pregnant. So she didn't really have a connection with the baby. But she was suddenly announced, I want to throw the baby in the bin. And I was like, God, what do I do now? But luckily, I wasn't that tired or stressed that day, so I could really be playful with her. So I said, oh, yes, let's throw Daddy in the bin as well. And she thought this was a great idea and then said, oh, yeah, let's throw Skip, who's our dog, in the bin. And we would sort of bounce off each other for ages, you know, oh, well, let's throw Grace, her teacher, in the bin or Granny in the bin. And then we sort of morphed out further into throw the chair in the bin or the tree in the bin. And it just carried on going. And I just kept playing with it for as long as she was laughing, because basically as long as she was laughing, I knew that we were releasing tension about what was coming. And I remember telling this to a friend of mine that Emily had said, oh, let's throw the baby in the bin. And she was horrified that Emily had said this. But I loved it because it was meant that Emily was really showing me that she was worried. She wasn't just trying to sort of deal with it. And it meant that if I, and also my mindset, obviously with Hand in Hand, meant that I knew that she wasn't being horrible or mean, or that, you know, I was creating this spoilt narcissistic brat who was only self-centered. I mean, it was, and if I had shut her down and said, don't say such a horrible thing, don't be so mean, this baby's going to, you know, her fears would never have gone, they wouldn't have gone away. In fact, they would have gone inward, and she would have then sort of just swallowed them in, and her behavior, it would have then leaked out in her everyday behavior. So the more that you can encourage your child to talk about it, if playfully or not, just it gets it out of their bodies and it releases the fears so clearly for them, which is really lovely. Another preventative measure, which was one of the cornerstones of Hand in Hand's approach, is called special time. And Lyra alluded to it, and we'll talk a bit more about it as well. But this is a really lovely way of being with our children that's different from our normal interactions with our children, you know, because we can think, well, we spend a lot of time with the older child or with our children. But a lot of that time can really be pottering around at home and doing jobs together. So special time is really different, and it's when you give focused one-on-one attention to your child. And it can be for 5 minutes or for 30 minutes. It's really just however long you've got to be able to give them. And the way that we differentiate it from normal play is that we name it. So we call it special time or whatever. You can come up with your own name. And we time it. So, and this seems a bit contrived to begin with, and in that you actually get a timer and you go, right, we're going to have 5 or 10 minutes to play together. But it's really great. And timing it is great because it means that your child knows that they've got you for that amount of time. And you know that you only have to play in this way for that amount of time as well. So it can sometimes, because when we've got a million of one other things to do, play can be like, oh, God, I really can't be bothered to play. So then you can just switch on for a couple of minutes. And we allow our child to completely lead whatever we do. So there's no teaching or directing. It's really, it's your time, your child's time to decide, because so much of their life is decided for them. So this is their time to really lead. And then we just delight in them, and we really actively pour all of our love and attention into them so that they can really feel our love and feel our connection. So that they're then going to be less likely to feel worried that your love is going to go into the baby, is going to be diverted, because their emotional cup, as we call it, is full. So that's a really lovely way, and you can do it strategically. It's ideal to do it often every day. but that's not realistic for everybody. So if you can do it as often as you can, but you can also do it strategically, just like when I was saying about the she's mine game, if you can start to see your child wobbling and, you know, starting to go off track, you can suddenly go, right, let's have 10 minutes of special time. And that's a really lovely approach. So, Lyra, would you like to talk now about how special time helped you when your daughter Summer was born?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Helena.
Oh.
Good tips there. Special time was a very useful tool when my daughter was born. And Finn, he wasn't quite two when she arrived, so he was much younger than Helena's five-year-old. But still, you know, I guess he was still going, you know, still having some kind of feelings there that, you know, things were changing. So before my daughter was born, we'd been having special time regularly, and it was quite easy actually to fit in only having one child. Like, and I think he did feel quite topped up emotionally, and this regular time with him that I spent really helped pave the way for the big change ahead. And so he felt connected to me and close, and then was obviously more resilient then in coping with the arrival of his sister. Of course, when she was born, things changed, as they inevitably do, and the routine was disrupted. But as soon as I was home and had recovered enough from the birth, then I decided to devote one of Summer's naps. And each day she had lots, as newborns do. So I devoted one whole nap of hers to Finn. So we'd have special time to start with, maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And then even after that had finished, we'd just play or do things together. And I just ignored everything else for that one nap that I had of Summer's for that day. So housework got put on the back burner for a bit, or anything that I needed to do. And I just really focused that time on Finn. And I think it really did help him out in the transition, because there was very little acting out on his part. However, a few months after Summer was born, there was a point where I remember Finn acting out, especially when I was trying to breastfeed. And I think this is a common thing that happens, because you're giving, you know, your time to the baby, and you can't physically move very easily either. You're sitting there breastfeeding. And that was challenging to me, to have him constantly asking for things as soon as I sat down to breastfeed, or, you know, physically throwing things at me, or, you know, doing things like that. And so knowing what I did about the brain and about this approach, I could recognize that he needed a little bit more connection from me, and that was how he was asking for it. He had some feelings there that were, you know, getting in the way of him thinking well and allowing me to be with his breastfeeding sister. So, and I'd also realized at that time that our special time had lapsed a bit. So as soon as we felt connected again and I was able to focus on having regular special time again, he was much more tolerant of me attending to the baby, and then more able to wait his turn for attention as well. So it really worked in that situation. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, special time is great. And it can be easy to let it lapse sometimes,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And days get busy, yes. But then they immediately show us that that they need it again. Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely. So, play and social time is great at building the connection. But there's times when our children will get frustrated, angry, and upset, then play really isn't appropriate or useful at that time. Because sometimes you can try to be playful, but that, you know, your child can just be, nah, I'm really upset, I'm not having it. And so the next bit we'll talk about is really, what do we do then when our child really is, you know, full of upset feelings and is just, yeah, inconsolable in that approach. So play, you know, we move on from play. So similar to what Lyra was saying earlier on, is we listen to our child, and we can see that, you know, our child is having a really hard time with whatever's going on for them, but particularly with having a new baby. And often we try and fix things for our children and make things better, but we really can't fix the problem that, you know, this baby is either coming or it's there, and it's not going to go away. So we can connect with our child. That's what we just really, it's all about connection, you know, either through play, through listening. And then they can tell us how hard it is for them. And this sounds very great. You know, they can tell us how hard it is. But often, you know, your child, you know, like Finn was really young and not particularly articulate. But even, you know, children when they get older and even ourselves, when we get so angry and upset, we just, you know, our brain starts to shut down, as Lyra was saying, and we can't think, we can't articulate, you know, our language goes out the window. So when they, you know, one of their ways of telling us that they're upset is by having, you know, a tantrum. Getting really angry and crying, and it can be over seemingly completely insignificant looking things. And it's really important that we don't dismiss them crying over wanting a pink plate instead of a blue plate, or the biscuit you've given them is broken, or, you know, really inconsequential things. But it means that their child is really upset. So whatever your child is crying about, really allow them to have their feelings around it. And yes, so saying that they, you know, often we also ask them to use their words. So using their words is not going to be helpful for them because they can't think. But they are showing us very clearly in their behavior. So they need to release these feelings. They need to release them physically as well as through crying. So that's when they will lash out. They will push against us. They'll tremble. They'll sweat and they'll cry. And so our role really is to just to keep them safe, to keep everyone else safe from them lashing out. So we move in towards them. We're really focusing on connecting. And Patty, I love this. She often describes that she's, you know, sometimes we have to crawl through barbed wire, underneath barbed wire, to reach through the anger, to reach our child. So instead of putting them into time out or sending them to their room, which I was often sent to my room, we stay with them and we empathize with how they feel, and we try and pour as much love as we can into them, even though it appears that they're rejecting us and they're just not interested, but we stay with them the whole time. And they will cry and they will rage for as long as they need. And that part, for as long as they need, can be really hard as well, because in the midst of a tantrum, and I've had this a lot, you know, it can sometimes feel like it's going to go on forever, that they're just going to be upset and angry and it's just never going to end when you're in the midst of it. But it's really important to trust that it is going to end, and that they will cry hard and vigorously and physically. And then it's going to come to an end, and, you know, you can get to that other side. And when your child will get to that other side, they will often just be very content. Some, especially when they're younger, they might fall asleep. But when they're older, they might just suddenly get up and suddenly run off and play. And there's no post-cry analysis, you know, in-depth discussion. It might be that later on they might want to talk about it, but at that time, they've cried, they've done their job, they're off. It's great. So, Emily, she's now six. So when we had the baby, when George was born, and, she did not want me to use any of her baby stuff for him. And luckily we've been given loads of new stuff. So it, you know, a lot of the time it wasn't an issue. And I remember, I didn't want to unduly upset her because I was conscious, especially being an older child, that, you know, she was really being put out. You know, she'd been an only child for the 6 years, essentially. So I tried to, okay, well, I won't use, you know, that lovely blanket. I'll use this other one. But then it got to the point where I really needed to use, I can't remember what it is now, but I really needed to use some of the baby items that used to be hers. And I also finally twigged that it was a good opportunity for her to work on her feelings around George coming into our family. So I set the limit and I said, I'm going to use, I think it's a blanket, I'm going to use this blanket for George. And she got so angry and was trying to pull it off me and really upset and hitting and lashing out. And luckily George, I think, was asleep at the time. So I really, you know, stay connected with her. And one way was physically connecting with her is that I kept hold of the blanket. So she's trying to pull the blanket off me and I'm holding onto the blanket. So she's tugging and I'm gently pulling and, so not harshly pulling away from her, but just going, sweetie, you know, I need to use this blanket. And I know you don't want me to use the blanket for George, but I am going to use this blanket for George. And really gave her the space to just howl and rage and be, you know, really release, you know, a lot of pent up feelings that she'd been having about, you know, this baby, you know, join the family. And when she finished, she was relaxed. She really didn't mind the blanket. You know, the blanket was, she'd never played with the blanket before. It wasn't the blanket. It was the emotions around George being there. Listening to our children crying is probably, and raging can be one of the hardest challenges. It's one of the hardest challenges I've found. And especially if, like I can listen to crying, but I find my child's anger very hard. And a lot of that is because I wasn't listened. You know, I wasn't allowed to have my anger when I was little. If you're finding that, you know, you suddenly don't have the patience, you know, you're too tired, it just seems too much, please know that you're not alone. You know, it's really challenging work and not everybody really appreciates and understands what our children are going through and how important their releases are. So it's really critical that we support ourselves. And so that so that we can listen to our children. So a listening partner is another of the hand in hand tools. And it's where you swap time with another parent. On a regular basis. So similar to how we give our children special time on a regular basis, if we can have our own listening time on a regular basis, that means that our emotional cups are fuller and we've got an opportunity to be in a better space. So you decide on how much time you both have, and then you divide it in half so that you each have an equal amount of time. And during your time, you have the freedom to fully express what's going on for you. You don't have to sanitize it and go, oh, well, you know, I know he's finding it hard. You can go, oh, my God, my child is driving me up the wall. And this, you know, you can really get it out. And just like, you know, Lyra is being really warm and listening to me talking now, you know, just by the listener offering your warmth to the person who's speaking is just so wonderful. And it allows you to release your big feelings around it. So when you're listening, you know, offer your warmth, but you don't need to offer suggestions or advice. You know, all those things that we do in our normal conversations with each other where we jut in and we go, oh, yeah, I know, my child's like that, blah, blah, blah. It's holding the space. Like when we hold the space for that our child is good, we hold our space that this, you know, the other person is a good parent who will figure things out, who just needs to release the emotions that are, you know, that are blocking her from thinking in the way that she can. And it's a really great thing to do and something that's not always recognized, but absolutely key. So Lyra, do you want to say some more on listening time?
Yeah, so important, isn't it? And thank you, Helena, for explaining it so beautifully too and for your thoughts. And I too have found listening time with another parent when my children aren't there, obviously, to be so helpful in my parenting. And I've noticed that over time too, my buttons, you know, the hot things that, you know, rile us up so much, those buttons aren't pushed as much, and I do have more patience and also the ability to think a bit more flexibly in different situations. So it kind of, as well as topping up our connection cup emotionally, I think it just, In doing so, it allows us to think more flexibly or to think well in those situations that are challenging with our children. So it really is a powerful tool, and I think something that really sets the Parenting by Connection approach apart from a lot of other parenting tools out there is this listening time. And even though it might feel a bit uncomfortable and awkward at first, like, I really get that as well. I think it took me about 2 years from having first heard about listening partnerships to actually trying it out myself. So I think it's a big step, but it's so rewarding. Yeah. And yes, as parents, like we know so much, we have big feelings as well as our children. And maybe even more so when we make this transition to becoming parents of two, or if it's the third on the way or more, then there is that much more to juggle and think about during each day with that extra little baby around. So we really encourage you to reach out for that support that you need to help you through this transition time. It's just so important. Yeah. Great. Okay, so we've just reached the part of our call where we'd like to open it up to take your questions. So if you have a question or even just a comment, or you'd like to share a story or just share where you're at with, you know, welcoming a new baby, or maybe one's arrived and you're wanting to share that as well, that's fine. If you just press star 2 on your phone, or then it'll show us that who would like to speak, and we'll take those questions. Okay, so we've got, I think from Seattle, was it? Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. How are you going?
This is great. I've taken a lot of notes. This is
good. Oh, great.
But we're practicing a lot of positive parenting, so there's just a lot of reminders. But my question is, so I am very, very pregnant. Like, I could give birth today.
Okay.
And I have a 3.5. My husband and I have a 3.5-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
And right now our challenge is that he is acting out against my husband.
Okay.
And he's going through a real mommy phase right now.
Yeah.
And he is having a hard time letting me go to the store, or if I need to rest or alone time, he has a hard time connecting with his father. And I am the main parent. Like, I am the disciplinarian, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. So I practice these things that my husband doesn't know how to practice yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's still in the learning stages of how I parent, because both my husband and I were parented totally different.
Yeah.
So I'm like the main connector, you know, between two of them, and sometimes my son will just, the switch will flip, and he will go completely berserk and want mommy, you know, and I'm like, I can't help you. So I was wondering if there was any advice on helping my husband connect with his son, especially during this time and the transition.
No, and it's a great question and a great thing to be thinking about, especially, you know, as the new baby arrives and, you know, more of your time is going to be spent, you know, with a baby. And it's, I think you're thinking so well about your family in terms of, wanting that connection to be there between your husband and your son as well. So, And I think this is, you know, it's quite a common thing that happens as well, especially you being one of the main connecting parent, as you put it. So one of the things that might be helpful if you feel like it would be, if your husband would be open to it, is to introducing him to the concept of special time and having that as a regular thing between your husband and son. And that may just help kind of top up that connection and feel, you know, so your son feels like he, you know, has that warmth there as well from your husband, and won't be so needy on you being there for him. Does that sound like something that, you know, your husband would be open to learning about that special time? Or does he do things like that already?
Yes. I encourage him, as soon as he gets home from work and gets out of his suit, that he spends at least 20 minutes undivided attention with our son, doing what our son chooses to do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great. Yeah.
I think it's temper tantrums, you know, the lashing out part that my husband doesn't, that we both don't know how to handle yet.
Yeah,
but
sure.
The anger, I guess, is the anger.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And have you heard about what, how Helena was talking about staying and listening, and in Parenting by Connection we call it stay listening, while that temper tantrum, that outburst is happening? Do you
have a sense I'm accustomed to that.
But
if it's between, if my son is upset with my husband for, how do you say, something that we don't understand why he's so inconsolable, you know.
He
got the green plate instead of the blue plate, and he just switches those. But it's not my fight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to get in the middle of, how can I introduce that to my husband?
Yeah, look, that's, it's a tricky one. Yeah. Helena, do you want to share any of your thoughts?
On introducing it to husband, my husband still struggles listening. So we sort of, you know, he's great at doing special time, and so it's fabulous that your husband is already doing that. I think that's just great. And a lot of, I mean, you could also encourage rough and tumble play, especially with your son. You know, boys love it, but girls love it too. You know, just mock wrestling and all that fun side. But introducing the listening to your husband, I found that once I got really comfortable listening to my daughter, is that well, not really comfortable, but once I got used to doing it, I would point out to my husband, look, you know, she's really off track now, she's, you know, she's clearly having a hard time. I would then stay listen, and then I would point out to my husband, now look how amazing she is. You know, look how relaxed, how beautiful, how light she is. And so doing that a couple of times, the penny dropped for Evan, that he was going, this thing really does work, you know, because Evan will not read anything. He won't come to talk, you know. So it was really seeing the effects on Emily very clearly. That's one of the best ways. But we also run groups, so and there might be a male one that, you know, your husband might be more willing to attend or listen to. How about you, Lyra? Any other suggestions?
That's great.
Yeah, I think modelling it, like as Helena said, you know, that, and seeing, letting your husband see that change in the child is, you know, is the most powerful way to be able to share it, to be able to, you know, bring some more awareness to that. Yeah. And I guess, and definitely I would second that, you know, the rough and tumble games, and even the games that, like Helena mentioned, the She's Mine game, you know, that's a really good one to kind of balance out that attention, you know, seeking for both mum and dad. Like, it's, you know, if you can both get in there and play those kind of games, it's, that strengthens that connection as well. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. That's great advice. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Okay. And someone in Vancouver, is it? Hello?
Hi.
This
is Linda in Vancouver. Hi.
Hi.
I had a question about the listening to children when they're raging. And what do you do when you've got a child who's screaming? He runs to her room and says, get away from me, stay away from me, get out of here, you're the worst mummy ever. How do you know how close to get there? How do you deliver the love in that situation?
That's
a baby in the house.
Yeah, it's really tricky. And, yeah, I've got a few thoughts I'll share, and then I'm sure Helena will as well. So I think the most important thing that we can remember in that time is that our children don't really want us to go away. You know, they're really upset and they need us to be close. I think it's up to you to sort of gauge how close or how much closeness you want to offer, and, you know, and still obviously respecting your child and not overpowering him with that, you know, I'm coming in close regardless of, you know, what you say kind of thing, but more about following them. So if they, for instance, if they go off to their room and slam the door, you can kind of sit outside the door and say, I'm right here. I know you don't want me close, but I'm going to stay close with you while you're upset because I love you and I want to be here for you. I won't come in if you don't want me to come in, but I'm right here. And, you know, there might be things thrown at the door and, you know, just go away, go away. But if you can still offer a skerrick of connection there, and even if, you know, you're holding the baby as well while you're outside, or even just offering your connection from across the room if that's where he is, you know, you might be breastfeeding or attending to the baby, and just saying, I'm right here, I can see that you're really upset and I really want to stay with you while you're upset, those kind of things. I think it's just it is a tricky thing to navigate, that, you know, go away behavior, but just remembering that, yes, you know, they don't really want us to go away, and that we can kind of play around with what distance feels right with our child. Yeah. Helena, do you have anything else?
Yeah, no, I
would like to add.
I agree with everything, and I think it's also important to remember that pretty much every child given the opportunity will say that. It's not just your child and you're not doing anything wrong, that your child is saying that. My child does that. I'm sure Lara's child does
yes,
that.
Yes, my child does too.
So we really know that, you know, what your child is expressing is quite normal. So I think that's really important to hold. And also just I sometimes, when I find it hard, I just keep saying in my mind, connect, 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 you know, because it might appear that they're pushing you away, and, you know, they might physically be pushing you away, but it's about they're just so overwhelmed with just horrible feelings, and they need us, and they're probably only going to do this sort of behavior with us as parents. They're not going to do that with other people that they don't feel safe with. So Patty describes it as a backhanded compliment, that they're going to be their worst with us. As Lyra was saying, I think to sort of get, you know, if they're closing the door, it depends on how old they are. And one of my teachers describes it as a dance. So, you know, there's no rigid rules. You sort of might move in close and then step away a bit and then move in close again and step away. It's really sort of following the child, but knowing that you need to stay with them in whatever way that looks like. And I had a time with Emily that she would say, go away, go away. And then I managed to get into the door, into her bedroom, and I sat I closed her bedroom door and I sat there. So I was in her room with her, and she had the freedom to do whatever she wanted in her room. But she chose to come up next to me and try to squeeze between me and the door, going, Mummy, you're hurting me, you're hurting me. So, you know, I clearly wasn't even moving towards her or hurting her in any shape or form. But so children, they can behave quite irrationally in that time, but they want us to be there.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Thank you. That's wonderful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And the other thought I just had too is that, you know, if it's, if her child is screaming things out, they're like, you're the worst mummy in the world, I hate you, which happens, as Helena said to us all probably, is just to, part of the stay listening technique that we describe, the tool there is to allow our child to kind of have freedom of the mouth. So there's no reprimands about what they're saying, and just recognizing that they just need to get all that out. They're not thinking well, it's just that emotional tension releasing, offloading. They're not kind of thinking seriously that you're the worst mum in the world. It's just what they're saying right then and there. So that freedom of the mouth is the way that Patty puts it, as, you know, it can be hard to listen to for sure. And that's the other part. If you are finding it really hard to listen to those kind of things, which, you know, it triggers lots and lots of feelings in us about how, you know, we could never get away with that as a child, being, you know, saying those kind of things to our parents. And so if you do find yourself, you know, in that, thinking those things, then often taking the time out to have someone listen to you, as we mentioned before, with that listening partnership, can be really helpful in offering, then being able to offer a bit more connection to our child in that state. So, yeah, hopefully that's helpful.
for you as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, pleasure. Great. Okay, so we're
4 minutes left.
Yeah, no, we better finish up. So we've come, to the end of our call, and on the replay link that we'll go through the we'll recap first on what we've spoken about in the call. So hopefully you've got some insight. Oh, yeah. You're right.
No, sorry. You go. Yeah.
So hopefully now you've got a bit of insight into how your child's brain works and what's happening inside their brain when their behaviour is challenging. And also just remembering that this challenging behaviour is a signal to us that our children need connection. And one effective way that we can respond to this is through play, like either play listening or with special time. And when our children are really upset, staying and listening can help them shed this upset and return to their more reasonable ways of being. So the other part of that too is when we ourselves find our patience is frayed and our own behaviour flaring, then it's time to reach out and ask for some listening time or support from another adult to help us through. Okay, so I'd just like to mention a few other offerings from Hand in Hand that are coming up. So there's more of these free teleseminars or parenting calls coming up, so check the website at handinhandparenting.org. And as I mentioned in the introduction, there's also lots of other free resources, including a monthly newsletter, the articles and membership to the email discussion group. And if you want to learn these skills more deeply, we offer an instructor-led 6-week-long class called the Parenting by Connection Starter Class. And this class receives great reviews, and I think it's the best way to learn about our approach. Mm. And yeah, the classes are small, so you receive lots of personalised attention and time to ask questions and that kind of thing. So I've got two classes starting in at the end of July, an in-person one here in the Southern Highlands, but also I'm leading a core group for an online starter class beginning on the 27th of July. So, and that's on Mondays at 12 p.m. Sydney time. So this exact time actually. So if that works for you, you're welcome to join on that. And there'll be links to these on the replay link that you'll receive for this call, so you can check out the information there. And Helena, you've got some classes coming up too?
Yes, so I'm in the northern beaches of Sydney. So I've got one starting in end of July on Sunday mornings, and I hold them regularly in northern beaches and lower north shore in Sydney. I've got things that my website is birthandparenting.com.au, as well as running things through Hand in Hand as well.
Great, wonderful. And yeah, if you're looking for even more personalised attention or have a really hard issue that you're trying to resolve in your family, then Hand in Hand does offer one-on-one consultations with instructors as well. And if you're looking for something more, excuse me, self-paced or self-guided, then there's the Parent Rescue Series, like online classes that you can do on no more hitting or setting limits and building cooperation or how to help your child with sleep. There's also the Taming Sibling Rivalry course that's really helpful too. And that might be more relevant for you guys, and there's a link to that on the replay link as well. So, great. So just reminding you too that Hand in Hand is a not-for-profit organisation that depends on our donations to provide free services like this parenting call and all the articles on the website and our email group, and also scholarships for classes and instructor training. So it's easy to donate on the website. Any amount helps. And so together we can support parents all over the world. So, yeah, we thank you for being with us on this call today, and we'll wrap it up now and hope you've enjoyed it. It's been really great to have you here with us.
Yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you. And I hope those of you who have asked questions and didn't ask questions have got what you needed from the call. And, feel free to contact Hand in Hand for more of exactly what Lyra said. They're just really amazing classes. Mm. So we hope that your new baby
comes into your family beautifully, your older siblings can adjust, and that you get the support that you need. So thank you for being on the call.
Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.